In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Well, hello, White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of the Future Sox Podcast. My name is Ian Eskridge. Joining me this week is Mr. James Fox. How are you, James?
How's it going, man? Good. Lots of stuff to discuss before Tyler gets here.
Yeah, it's going to be action-packed tonight. How did you enjoy your Father's Day? Did it go all right?
Yeah, it was good. Went swimming over at my parents' house. Had a bunch of barbecue. I had a busy weekend. I feel like I had stuff like every day. It was crazy.
You and me both. Lots of baseball stuff, and yeah. So the big news this last weekend, leading into the weekend anyway, Andrew Vaughn gets traded. How did you process that when you heard that right off the bat?
I was shocked, but I loved it immediately. I hadn't even seen Aaron Civale's numbers. I knew, like, I had seen vaguely that he was, like, bumped to the bullpen and he requested a trade or whatever. And I was like, okay, whatever. Like, that's fine. Like, I'm like, he could pitch for the White Sox. But I honestly didn't think that the White Sox would pick up the money, right? I didn't think it was fathomable that somebody would take Vaughn. And to me, it's like, even if I think they have, like, grandiose plans of, like, Civale being decent and them getting two prospects for him, you know, even if he's just here to, like, be a buffer for your young starters, he's offering you something, and you traded a guy who was never going to play for the White Sox again. Like, they were done with Andrew Vaughn. I think it was pretty evident. It's definitely evident now. I don't know what the Brewers see. They're pretty good at this. But I don't really think that one's going to burn them.
Yeah, I don't know what they're thinking. I don't see Andrew Vaughn, regaining any of his luster that he had coming out of college. I don't see him doing much of anything. They got Rhys Hoskins, and I know that White Sox fans would probably rather have Rhys Hoskins than Andrew Vaughn. So, they already have him. So I don't know what their plans are.
Well, there was a tweet from somebody, Nightingale or something, that was like, if the Brewers are convinced that Vaughn could be good for them, they'll trade Rhys Hoskins. I'm like, in what world would he, like, he's been worth like -2 WAR like in his career. Like, all the stats are out there now, like how awful he was. And some of that is skewed because his first 2 years, he spent a lot of time in the outfield, like accumulating -WAR. But, I mean, even his best seasons were like barely above replacement level for like WRC plus. I think he had like a 110 WRC plus one time as a right-handed.
At his peak.
Yeah, as a right first baseman that plays bad defense. He doesn't walk. He doesn't hit enough homers. The fact that they got anything for him is astounding to me. And this guy, you know, I mean, look, if you look at the track record so far, and it's very, you know, brief, like even what they've done with Eric Fetty, with Shane Smith, with Adrian Hauser, like, Civale could be a 3.7 ERA guy for the White Sox and accumulate innings. And
that's useful.
You trade him for a couple of DSL arms or whatever and you go on his merry way. I mean, that, you know, they weren't going to get that for Vaughn.
No, I mean, they're going to get more value out of Civale. I mean, there's just no way that he won't be worth more than Vaughn was, even if he pitches exactly how he did in Milwaukee, which wasn't bad. They just had more arms than they brought Mizorowski.
Well, again, the numbers are kind of skewed, right? So it's five starts with an ERA close to like five, I think. But the first start, he got hurt. And then the four starts after that, he had like a 3.6 ERA.
Yeah. I don't know what the Brewers are doing. But then again, they gave up Shane Smith as well. So, and I know that, Chris Getz says, oh, well, he's not the same guy that was there last year. You know, because he added the change.
Yeah.
And so that was a big deal. But at the same time, you know, all the national people have said, I can't believe that there's 40 more people that were more qualified to be on their 40 man than Shane Smith, even without the changeup. I mean, last year he was pretty stinking good out of the pen for them and starting. So I don't know what they were thinking.
Well, I think lots of people identified him right away as one of the better options, like in the Rule 5 draft. And one of the other ones was Mike Vassell, and now they have both of them.
So crazy.
You know what's funny is, remember, Ryan Noda was the first pick in 2023 to the A's, and he had a pretty decent year. And he hasn't been very good since, but...
Yeah.
So they have another Rule 5 guy on the team.
Yeah. We're going to have all of them. But and we had Gage Workman also. Yeah. So, I mean, we're just going to go through all the Rule 5 guys that we can possibly get in one season and stack those guys with your Josh Rojas's and Jacob Amaya's, and, you know, we're just going to have
Nick
all
Maton.
Yes. Every single one of the guys that you see on somebody's roster and you go, oh, I recognize that name.
Did you see it?
But they're not any good.
It's 51 players already.
Oh, man, Sporkle's going to be brutal.
Like, they're going to get to 80-plus.
I mean, so they made it to – we were, like, floored when they made it to, like, what was it, 74 at spring training?
Yeah.
I mean if they make it to 80, that's played on the 26,
they won't have 80.
Man.
I guess that's too many. But they'll definitely have 10 more, which puts them at 60 – they might get to 65 with bullpen arms and call-ups, and, you know, it just, you know, like, you might have Drew Baker playing at some point, or, you know, Yeesh. One of these guys.
Yeah, insane. So the White Sox pick up Ryan Noda. Another one of these things that I don't – I mean, I get what they're trying to do to see if they can find one of these guys and then possibly fix them. Because they've had some success before, but I don't know, hasn't worked out so far this year. And all the guys that they've picked up have gotten hurt for considerable amounts of time. And
he kind of fits the profile of what they're looking for, though. It's a lot of strikeouts. Like, he's got to cut down K's or he won't be up very long. But he does walk a lot, and he has like a general idea of what's happening, and he's decent at first. And they don't like the way Tim Elko is approaching things, and, you know, gave him a very clear message when they sent him back. You know, he's just like in between. I can't really explain Brooks Baldwin going back down, but, you know, we'll see. It's a lot of roster churn.
Yeah. So, about that. Yeah. Baldwin comes up, gets three pinch hit, you know, cracks at the apple, and, things do not go well. A young guy coming in to, you know, take some swings against the team's best pitcher in high leverage situations, and things didn't go well for him. Shocking development. And Tim Elko, you know, he's, you know, just part of the issue here is nobody's throwing him fastballs usually, except for high fastballs, and they're throwing him lots of breaking stuff. And if you watch his at-bats in the minor leagues, one thing that he does is he's generally sitting fastball, and he doesn't swing at breaking stuff until he absolutely has to. And usually that's when it ends with either a single to right field or a strikeout. So that's something that he's going to need to sort out. So, So we clarify here, we've got Just Baseball's Tyler Jennings popping on here in a little bit. once he's ready, we're going to go ahead and bring him on here. And so we're going to go ahead and crack through this White Sox stuff here before we get to the draft stuff, which is coming up shortly.
Jack, I would say bottom of the order, probably. Jack asked if on a good White Sox team where Mydroth would hit at the top or the bottom, I would think the bottom probably. I mean, if you have like three guys better than him, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he fits the, you know, he takes pitches. He generally works in at bat pretty well. So, I mean, I'm fine with either, really. But, yeah, on a good Sox team, you know, ideally you would like to have him doing that. But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, if he's like your nine hitter, you're pretty good.
Yeah, no, that would be great. So there was a kind of a thing on social media this last week with Noah Schultz getting bumped to AAA. Elijah popped that tweet out, and Noah Schultz is indeed going to Charlotte. Your thoughts on Noah going to Charlotte?
I was a little surprised at first because I didn't even think they'd bother. But apparently they, you know, they gave him like a clear plan, stuff they wanted him to work on, and they think that this is going to help for whatever reason. And we'll see what they kind of talk about. I don't know if they want him seeing guys that are a little bit more advanced or, you know, pitching in the tiny ballpark for whatever reason. But, you know, Brian Bannister obviously clapped back on Twitter a little bit, kind of saying what, you know, they had a plan for Noah Schultz. They were trying to get him to what, throw his cutter less than he had been previously. So, you know, there were still some questions about what Noah Schultz uses to get righties out consistently. We'll see some of that in Charlotte.
Yeah. So they took away his cutter, you know, like drastically reduced the amount of cutters he was throwing, and also up the changeup as well, which has not been historically one of his best pitches, and it's something that he knew that he needed to develop. So that was kind of hurting his, you know, K to walk ratio. But I mean, it's, if you look at all of his games that he's pitched so far in Double A, it's not like guys were hitting him all over the place. He's still not allowing hits. He was still not allowing very many runs. You know, the one thing that it was doing is it did make his ERA go up, and people think, oh, well, look at him. His ERA is at like 4.3 or whatever it was at. And so they think he's giving up a lot of runs, but that's not actually what's happening. He's giving up, you know, a run here and there, but it's cutting, you know, the pitch counts are catching up with him earlier. So he's not a lot, he's not making it as far into game. So his ERA is going up because of that.
Yeah. What do you think this indicates as far as like his big league trajectory?
Time-wise?
Yeah, I mean, I think it means sooner rather than later, honestly. Because yeah, he's going to Charlotte. If he's good there, it's kind of like, what are we doing? You know, I mean, I'm sure they have an innings limit that they want him to hit in the minors, because my guess is that he doesn't make starts in the big leagues this year. They would bring him up to throw bullpens and kind of like pitch in relief a couple times a week. It's a Brian Bannister thing. And then with the full intention of him being in the 26 rotation, it can't be that soon, but it's not going to be September anymore, I don't think, if he's going to Charlotte already.
Yeah. I don't really know as far as when he'll come up, but I would not 100% not be surprised if he was making bullpen appearances here late in the year.
Yeah, for sure. So speaking of bullpen appearances, we didn't talk about Grant Taylor, did we?
No, that was going to be next on the list here.
Yeah, so I mean, I think we've beat to death how we like feel about it. I think we're a little bit more open-minded than we were when they first said it. You know, I would recommend listening to Jim Callis on the latest Pipeline Pod, where he kind of shares his thoughts on it. You know, but Grant Taylor's in the big league bullpen. I thought a good indicator was the night that he pitched back-to-back nights in Birmingham. I'm like, okay, we're getting close here. Yeah. And then obviously I got word and tweeted it, and, you know, ahead of some of the beat guys. So that's fun. But yeah, he's in the big leagues. He's appeared a few times. He had a bit of a rough one in Texas, but also struck out three guys. I mean, he's totally disgusting. So we'll see how that goes. I'm curious to see how quick it is before they just like have him be the closer.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that they just didn't automatically just say screw it. Like we don't like they don't really have anybody else that's really all that great in high leverage situations. I don't see why they just don't let them have a crack at it right out of the gate.
Yeah, I know it was a little bit surprising.
Yes. So I'm going to answer this. So James Coogan asks, any update on Hagan Smith? I don't really have an update as far as like what he's doing other than that he is throwing and he is traveling with the team in Birmingham. As far as.
Yeah, I would think he could start this week. If he doesn't start this week, it'll be the following week. He's, you know, he needs a lot of innings. But. You know, he's ramping up, supposedly healthy. So,
yeah, I mean, I saw him standing around in the dugout or in the, out in the dugout.
Yeah,
down there.
Trying to figure that out.
We'll see when he gets back on the mound in a game situation, but I know that he's definitely throwing. So,
Vince, Grant Taylor is listed at 6'3, 230. So he's not that short. He just, you know, it's, I don't know.
He's just not thin.
Yeah.
He's built. He's just not, he's not one of those, you know, long limbed 6'3 guys. He's a stocky 6'3. So Tanner McDougal, he gets bumped to AA. Pretty stoked about that personally. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, pretty well deserved. I mean, he's been good. I think, you know, a lot of times this year we've kind of talked about how, you know, we liked him. Keith Law had him ranked in, I think, like his top 10. But look, I think we always, and I don't necessarily want to speak for you, but I thought it was headed towards a bullpen future, a good bullpen future, but a bullpen future. And he's, you know, he's kind of changing the narrative a little bit, and we'll see what happens in AA. But, you know, he's one of the better pitching prospects in the system. I think if we re-ranked right now, he'd be in the top 20 for sure. So his stuff is just absolutely gross.
Yeah, I still had hopes for a starting role, but I could have seen if he had kind of worked himself into a bullpen situation. But he's been attacking hitters this year, and the walks have come down. And with the walks coming down, he's looked a lot better in a starting role. So
3.28 ERA in Winston over like 60 and 13 starts. It's like 11.4 Ks per nine. The walks are still right around 5, but they were higher than that before.
Yeah. Yep. No, he's had a couple of games where he's been up there in the 5-6 walks area. I think it was like 2 starts, if I remember correctly. But everything else has been like 1, 2, 3, you know, if he goes deep in a game. He's been doing pretty well. So, yes, baseball, we did answer that. If you want to scroll back, otherwise, just go ahead and jump back there and take a look afterwards. Yeah. We did talk about Schultz.
So the AA rotation, obviously, will have Hagan Smith in it, and then Tanner McDougal in it. And then Shane Murphy's been really good. I don't know. You know, Charlotte, he was a late pick, obviously, out of junior college. He's always been kind of good, but he's doing very well. He's a lefty in AA.
Yeah, so team saw him twice in 1 week, which generally either the first or the second time through, they'll get you. Or they'll get you both times if they like your pitch mix, you know? And this week against the Montgomery Biscuits, who they played in the championship last year, Shane Murphy goes 13 innings, and I think he allowed like 8 hits and no runs.
Yeah.
While striking out like 11 or so. So and it was on 140 pitches.
So it's 59 total innings, 49 at Birmingham with 7 starts. So strikeout rate's down. It's only like 8 guys per 9, but he's walking nobody basically in Birmingham with a 1.29 ERA.
Yep. All right, so we have a guest here. You got anything else you want to hit here right quick before we pop Tyler on?
No, I don't think there's anything else we had to do other than, like, you know, just general roster churn. I mean, I feel like there's a roster move made every day with this team. So
yeah.
that's been interesting. It's what a bad team should be doing, I feel like.
Yeah. Right. All right. I am pretty close here. Give me 1 second.
Yeah, so again, like, we're going to have Tyler Jennings join us from Just Baseball. He's got a great podcast. So, you know, just I think this is what? This is the first draft guest that we've had. So we're going to be pretty general, but there was a pitching performance today that we probably need to talk about to start things off here.
Nah.
Yeah.
Didn't affect anything, I'm sure.
It was the first one in 60 years I saw. That's,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I know it's not like a big league no hitter, obviously, right? But it's, I guess I thought it would happen more recently than that.
It was a perfect game through what, like seven?
Yeah, and then he hit a guy or walked a guy, right?
Hmm. All right. Well, joining us tonight, as we begin our actual draft coverage, I guess, on the podcast here, we are being joined by Tyler Jennings at Just Baseball. How you doing, Tyler? Good to see you.
Doing good, guys. Doing good. Thank you guys for having me on.
Hey, thanks for coming back. Appreciate it.
Of course.
So Gage Wood, he was high on a couple of lists, but not on some others, like anywhere close. What are your thoughts on him throwing the first no hitter in College World Series in ages?
Yeah, it was like what, 65 years or something, which is just wild to think about with the amount of talent that has come through Omaha in the past 10 years minimum, just thinking about it. But you know, lost a perfect game. I think it was a back foot breaking ball he tried throwing, and it just caught the kid in the foot. And then the same thing happened in the ninth. The kid leaned into it. They called him out, struck out the next two. 19 strikeouts in nine innings is just otherworldly. And I understand, like, it's Murray State. It's a mid-major team. But Murray State's also gone through a gauntlet to get to this point. And they have one of the most potent offenses in the entire country. So, like, to do it on this stage is really special. And you know, I was talking to it a couple of friends earlier, where like I put out a tweet where I mocked myself. It's like I put him at 45 on our latest rankings because I was like, you know, shoulder impingement earlier in the year. He missed 8 to 9 weeks. And it just didn't feel like he had like a third offering. It's mainly just been fastball, curveball. That's really how it's just been. But seeing how he pitched today, mainly off those two pitches and holding the velocity as well as he did, it's really, really impressive. And I wouldn't be shocked if he's made himself at least $2 million, maybe more, just with today's outing alone.
100%. I mean, you were at a different place, obviously, at the time. Do you remember where you had Cade Horton, like, right, like, the day before the draft?
Off the top of my head, I don't.
It was the same type of thing, though, where he came flying. I mean, he was definitely going to go back for a junior season and then pitch so well that he went in the top 10.
Yeah, I want to say Cade Horton going into Omaha that year, we probably had him somewhere in the 40s or 50s.
Yeah.
So kind of similar range.
So it is similar.
Yeah.
So we talked about it on the show, Tyler. So the first thing I said, so like MLB Pipeline, I think, like, didn't even have Gage Wood like in their top 100, you know? And then look, it's like a lot of people I feel like didn't. And Kylie McDaniel was the first one a couple weeks ago. He mocked him 17 to the Cubs. And noted, you know, that they took Jackson Wiggins and they took Cade Horton. And he was a little bit ahead of everybody else, I feel like.
Yeah, I think Kylie's definitely beat us to the punchline on a public space. And I've even seen, like, you mentioned Pipeline not having him at the top of the 100. And again, I think that just goes to the injury that he had. You know, shoulders are nothing to mess around with. But just seeing how dynamic the stuff was today, he's definitely put himself into first round territory for me.
Yeah. I think Braves. Yeah. Braves makes sense.
he's definitely in that, you know, 15 to 25 range probably at this point, if I had to guess.
So is he the second college righty or the first one? Well, he's not the first one. Witherspoon will be the first one. But is it, you know, like, does he go ahead of Bremner now? I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, Brender is going to be an interesting case where, and I think even Riley Quick too, you can kind of throw him into this kind of like group of college right-handers where they've all got their own question marks to kind of answer. Like with Bremner, the slider regressed this year. He had troubles with the fastball to start the year, but he found his fastball as he went through the year. And then Riley Quick, obviously, kind of being held back. He's not too far off of TJ, so there's some health questions there. But Gage Wood has definitely put himself into that tier today. Even if he wasn't there already, like I think he's really turning it up a notch coming down the stretch. Like he struck out 13 against Creighton in the regional not too long ago. It's just really, really impressive what that kid has been able to do. And he did really well last year on the Cape as well. I think he struck out like 30 batters in 20 innings with just like 8 walks with roughly the same kind of stuff. So it's really, really impressive. There's now a track record. I genuinely will not be shocked if he's gone by like pick 20 or pick 25 at this point.
James, do you want to hop on with your barrage here?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I think you're the first guest, Tyler, so we appreciate it. But just like the draft class in general, I kind of know how I feel, but how do you think this one stacks up overall? And then if you want to do strengths and weaknesses now, you can as well.
Yeah, I will. The best way I can describe this class is that it's a draft class. Like there's no real like really standout demographic in here. And it's a pretty weak class at the top in general. And that's not to like hark on any of the guys that are in this class. Like there are some guys that I really do enjoy. But it, like you look at some of the guys at the top, like Jamie Arnold in a different class, like you put him in 2023's class, I would argue he may not be a top 10 pick. And he might be on the cusp of a top 15 pick. So that kind of puts into perspective how this draft class stacks up to some of the recent ones we've had. I would say it's probably a step back from last year's as well. So it's definitely down. If there's any strength to this class, I would say it's the high school bats. There's a plethora of shortstops at the top of this class. Ethan Holliday, Eli Willits, Steele Hall, JoJo Parker, Daniel Pierce, that really have put themselves into their own tier. And you can throw like Case and Cunningham as well into that group. And I think the best way to put it is like there's some scouts that wish these guys would kind of separate themselves a little bit. But it's a nice, you know, group of six to have at the top of the class where, you know, the glaring weakness, college bats. There's, you know, you look at Jace LaViolette was the guy who we all thought could be 1-1 at the start of the year. He really didn't perform all that well. He's turned into more of a legitimate platoon risk. So I do wonder how he performs moving forward or what his fit is in this draft class, because it's not the same as it was, you know, 6 months ago. And if there's another strength, I would say college arms at the top. You know, we talk about Jamie Arnold, Kate Anderson's put himself into that tier now, Liam Doyle, the premier lefties in this class. But then you also mentioned the righties we talked about before where, you know, Tyler Brender's still a top 20 pick in my eyes. Kyson Witherspoon could be a top 10 pick. I think those are the strengths of this class, but the weaknesses are definitely going to be on the college bat side, and more in particular than, say, the high school arms, because there's still some decent high school arms in this class.
Yeah, and usually, like, the really good classes, right, it's because, you know, all these college bats emerge, and this year it just, Iva Arquette and, Ike Irish are probably the top two guys, and Ike Irish is a position switch, and, you know, I think there's some question, I don't know how you feel about Arquette playing short or not, but it's just, without that certainty at the top, I feel like anything can happen, and we're obviously, what, like four weeks out? Or are we later than that? 5 weeks out? There's just not any clarity because you just don't have college bats like you normally do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like to your point, Arquette, like I don't think the shortstop or him being a shortstop is more of an issue than it was before. Like I personally think he's really improved on that front, and I think he looks like a kid that will stick at shortstop even with him being 6'5", 220. Because you talk about some of these taller middle infielders, like maybe they move to third base, I think Colson Montgomery was a great example of that a couple years ago. But I think Ava's proven there's more range, there's more flashiness to the glove. I do think there's a legitimate chance he sticks at shortstop, but my main issue is looking at the hit tool. Like, we wanted him to be a bit more patient, not be as aggressive coming into the year. And it's kind of just not changed, to be honest. There's still some swing and miss there, still kind of aggressive, but the power plays, legitimate glove at shortstop. And then even like Irish, you mentioned the position switch. I think he's a legitimate corner outfielder moving forward. Maybe gets a chance to start catching, you know, as he gets his feet wet in the minors. But it's a bat first profile on that one. I think he's not going to be a catcher long term.
No, not that one. Where is it? I found this here. Good question.
I don't think he falls further than 10th.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of figuring. I don't think that he'll get to the Sox. But,
and if he did, I think they're. I think they'd take him. Yeah.
I think the thing with Seth Hernandez right now is you look at the prep right-handers and just the prep, you know, arms in general. The last 10 years, who are the guys that have stood out in that demographic? Hunter Green, Jackson Jobe. It's not good. It requires a lot of patience. And I know Jackson Jobe just went, he just had TJ. So it's a very volatile demographic. And I think if you're going to be taking Seth Hernandez, you need a lot of patience. I still think this is the kind of guy that maybe bucks to turn a little bit. Like, having seen him in person, he is a legitimately different talent than some of the other prep right-handers we've seen in classes previous. But it's, again, just if you're someone like the Reds who has gone through this, you kind of have to like attempt to bite this. Like, you've shown the patience for Hunter Green before, and now you're kind of reaping the rewards of it. Kind of wonder what other teams in the top 10 can really afford to do that. It's not a hefty list. So he's going to be in a very interesting case on draft day. The stuff's legitimate. I think he's a top 5 pick, but if there's anything I've learned, prep arms do fall a little bit come draft day.
And there are teams with like multiple picks too, where that could like come into play for somebody where he gets his money like elsewhere. But I don't know. I feel like if he's on the board at 10, the Sox will just take him. So we'll see.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you on that one.
Always more pitching. Always more pitching. So, I mean, I don't even know. Like, I'm so underwhelmed by the bats this year from the college side of things, and I'm always underwhelmed by bats from the prep players. Do you expect that any of this to, you know, with the college players, do you think that there's going to be like some guys that are going to step up here in the College World Series that are just going to automatically raise their profile so much that they, somebody wants to take a risk on them?
That I'm not too sure at this moment. I thought personally going into this week, Brendan Summerhill from Arizona was a guy that could legitimately, you know, buy back his stock, because he hurt his hand halfway through the year and it took him out for a solid 5 weeks, if I had to guess. And he looked great coming back. Like, he didn't strike out for a solid 10 games. And he's a very polished hit tool, not a lot of swing and miss, but there's also not a lot of power there. And from what I've heard, some guys weren't really impressed with his performance this weekend. And I still like Brendan quite a bit. Like, good runner, could probably stick it at center field to start, but maybe push him to right field. But I want to see the power kind of come together. Have no idea if it ever will, but it's an intriguing profile. I just don't know if he's done enough to really push himself further up boards at this point. If I had to guess on another guy, maybe like Charles Davalon from Arkansas. I have him as a guy kind of like in the comp round, maybe push him into the back end of the first round if he performs well this week. And I'm not sure. I haven't really paid attention to their bats at this point for Arkansas. But he's an interesting cat in terms of he's maxed out. He's like 5'11", 190. But power plays up from what he is. It's very compact. It's very strong. And the hit tool is really, really good. So he'll probably play that second base, left field at the next level. But the bat really does play for him. And I think ultimately, say Arkansas makes a run through the loser's bracket on this side and pushes themselves into the finals against, you know, I think at this point, probably Coastal. Could see him push his way into the back end of the top the first round, but really at this point, those are the two main guys I kind of look at in terms of bats that could, you know, do something. And one of them's already out, unfortunately, with Summerhill. So it's going to be a very interesting time to kind of evaluate Omaha going down the stretch here.
I feel like the Coastal catcher can go higher than people think, maybe. But, you know, like if it's in the early 20s, you'd be like, oh, you know, okay bat, but you trust the defense really behind the plate. So Bodine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one. So I'm going to stay college and then, cause I want to go prep heavy, like for the White Sox, just cause of some of their ties. So for me, like one of the guys that they have been linked to a little bit, how do you say the Tennessee is Gavin Kylan or Keelan?
Keelan.
So he's a Wisconsin kid. So they know him well. He was on their area codes team. You know, they flocked in to see Tennessee, supposedly to see him. And look, I think they'd probably take a prep guy over him. I guess my question there is, like, what are the chances that he could play shortstop? And then if you think he can you compare and contrast him with Merrick Houston for me?
Yeah, I think kind of recently watching some of this film, I think he can probably stick at shortstop a lot more than people think. Tennessee's just been utilizing like Ariel Antigua, who's eligible next year. He's been a better shortstop glove for them over the course of the year. But when he came back from Keelan had a hamstring injury like halfway through the year and started playing shortstop more down the stretch. He's got some range to him. If he's going to his left or right on camera, he can get a little bit out of whack, but there's good arm strength. I feel like he can kind of stick there for a little bit until he comes across a better defender, but ultimately might be a second baseman. But the approach change really is the big thing for him. Like, it's last year he didn't walk. I think he had 9 walks on the year at Louisville and didn't strike out a lot, but it was a very aggressive approach, swinging 50% of the time or more. Come in this year, he's cut that by 10+%. Power's taking an uptick, even if you want to say that, like, you know, plays at Rocky Top, it's a trampoline at times, but you know, I think the power has gone up. I think the hit tool is pretty darn good for what it is. Even if he's like a offensive minded second baseman moving forward, I still think it's a good guy to take in this draft class. But compared to Merrick, Merrick's a legitimate shortstop. And I would wager the hit tool is maybe slightly better than what Keelan has. The power doesn't come close. I don't think Merrick has hit a ball over 108 this year. And as much as he's hit double-digit home runs this year, I think that's more of just a result of the couch being the couch. And, you know, a normal fly ball at, like, Baum Walker is 30 feet outside of the ballpark at the couch. So I think he's benefited from that. So I think at the end of the day, Merrick's probably like a 6-hit, 4 power guy with a chance to stick at shortstop legitimately. Whereas Keelan, you know, it's a left-handed bat with more power and similar hit, but might be a second baseman. I think there's a really good argument to make for both sides. I've got Keelan slightly over Merrick for my money, but I think you can go either which way with these guys. They're both legitimately good talents.
James, do you want to do the Willits tier?
No, I was gonna go Laviolette first. So okay. Just like how worried are you, you know, just with what basically happened with Jace Laviolette this year? I mean, obviously he came into the year, looked like a top 5 pick, obviously, but I mean it's not even the K's, it's the whiff rate and all of it is just kind of frightening. I think the Sox are a team who know him very well. Mike Shirley has a really good relationship with Michael Early, his coach. I think 10's probably too high in this class at this point, but I mean, what can he do at this point, I guess, to, you know, just go as high as possible?
honestly, I think at this point, it's a lot of guys kind of banking on his secondary tools to kind of help him. Because we've talked about the hit tool before, where I do think he's a legitimate platoon risk at this point. Maybe like a Matt Wallner-esque kind of player moving forward. He did not handle lefties very well this year. I think he only hit like 240 or something like that against them. And he had a whiff rate against lefty sliders of like 55%. It was not a good thing to really look at on paper. And another thing too was like the swing kind of looked more stiff at the start of the year. He kind of went through phases where like he looked really good, didn't look as stiff. And then here we are at the end of the year. I think he went like 2 for 14 with 11 punchies through the Mizzou series and going into Hoover, and it's 2 hits for 2 home runs. So he's really interesting. Like it's seven power from the left side, but the hit tool really doesn't leave a lot to really desire there. Maybe he sticks at center. I'm not too sure yet because he's kind of a mutant of sorts. Like he's 6'6", 240, and he moves a lot faster and he's a lot more athletic than he really looks like he should be. But I kind of do wonder, as he gets older, does he move to right field or left field? What does that kind of pertain for everything? But I think at the end of the day, I think a Matt Wallner type of bat is kind of what you're looking at here, which is still a major leaguer. Don't get me wrong, but it's definitely not the same kind of guy we thought coming into the year.
No, so Twins or Orioles for me, probably, you know?
Yeah. I think we mocked him because we did just put out a mock today. I think we mocked him to the Twins. And then also noted like the Orioles make sense as well.
So speaking of mocks, we were wondering when you would think that there's going to be some clarity on when the Nationals are, you know, who the Nationals are going to pick, and what would you do at number one if you had that pick?
Honestly, I have no idea if the Nationals are ever going to open up their book to us. They are very close knit right now, and getting information is very, very tough. And right now, kind of looking at what the trends have been for the past 10 years, there's only been one pick to have gotten slot or more, and that was Torkelson in 2020. Everyone else has been under slot. So you kind of go into this knowing slot value is over $11 million for 1-1. Is there a player in this class worth 10 mil? Probably not. So if I'm the Nationals, I kind of go into this thinking, who's going to give me the best bang for my buck? Who's going to give me the biggest haircut? And we've seen it before, like the Pittsburgh Pirates whatever class Henry Davis was, I think it was 21 or 22. I forget now. They kind of took him last minute because he gave them the biggest haircut, and it played into them. I think it was also the Bubba Chandler class as well. And that's paid dividends for them at this point. So I think the Nationals should definitely look at that. I've floated Eli Willits as a guy at 1-1. I really do enjoy him. He's very young for the class, free class from 26. Mm-hmm. It really good switch hitter from both sides of the plates. I would say there's more power from the left side, but even then, it's not a power threat. He's like a six hit tool from both sides. We have a chance to play shortstop. He can play center field in the pinch. He's a good runner. It's really toolsy. And I think he's on the same tier as Holiday for me, where, you know, Holiday's a potential 45 hitter with 7 raw compared to, you know, a kid that is very athletic, tests very well, and can legitimately stick a shortstop, where Holiday does have some question marks a bit. So, you know, you throw him out there. If he gets you the most haircut deal here, or if you go college route, Cade Anderson makes sense at 1-1. So, you know, we'll see what happens on draft day. This is probably going to come down to the wire, usually, like it always does, where the Nationals probably won't know who they're picking until they're officially on the clock. But at this point, I would wager some sort of like discount is going to happen at 1-1. I would say someone's going to get 9 mil, maybe at peak. But you know, I'm here to be proven wrong, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I don't necessarily think that it's going to be Holiday, because like he's going to get money at 4, So there's really no reason for him to take that big, unless he just like doesn't want to go to the Rockies. But like yeah. they'll pay him at four. So there's not really a reason for him to take that big of a deal. I had Willits in my first mock to them. Like I find that interesting too. I don't know how the college arms are going to, you know, like, but yeah, I agree. They'll be deal hunting. Do you, if somebody breaks the slot bonus record, do you think it's them or do you think it's somebody at like 2, 3, or 4?
Probably Rockies at 4.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, like they're not afraid to spend big on guys that kind of fall a little bit. I think last year, what, Charlie Condon fell to them and they went and they have now the tied record with Chase Burns for Condon. So, you know, they're not afraid to spend and they're still in the same boat where they have the bonus pool money to do it. So if Ethan Holliday's there at 4, there's bloodlines to go with that. Matt Holliday is a star in that city now. And I just don't think that if he gets to 4 or even 5 with the Cardinals, like he's off the board.
And then which college guy are the Angels going to take and put in the majors this year?
It's either going to be Liam Doyle or Kate Anderson. It's one of the two. If it's Liam Doyle, he'll be in a relief role by September. There's no question in my mind that that's going to happen. But for me with Doyle, like I want to see a bit more development on that front. But that's a fastball splitter combo that just plays in the majors right now, to be honest with you guys.
Yeah, so yeah, in your mock today, you have Liam Doyle at 10 to the White Sox.
Yeah. That was kind of an interesting point in our mock as well when we were talking about it, me and Connor. We were kind of wondering where we should put him, and I felt like, you know, the White Sox have done a string of lefties in the past. Noah Schultz, Hagen Smith last year, obviously. I would wager Doyle is kind of on that same level as Hagen, where he's got a dynamic 1-2 punch, doesn't really have much of a third offering, and there's some effort there, some relief risk. So like kind of following the trend a little bit, kind of that's where my mind kind of went. In like looking at Doyle, like I mentioned, I would like to see the breaking balls get a little bit better. Fastball in and of itself, best pitch in this class by far. Just getting the kind of angles he creates in the ride and run that he generates with his fastball is just insane. And he tunnels the splitter off it well. I think the splitter is a plus pitch. The cutter I would wager it's like a slider curveball in the low 80s. I think the cutter's the better of the two, but I feel like, you know, when I saw him in I think it was late March, he started pitching off the breaking ball a lot later in his outing, and the hitters really picked it up quickly because they understood what he was trying to do, stealing the first pitch strike with the curveball and then try and sneak a fastball or something by you. And hitters really caught on to that. So I would like to see a bit more on that front. But this is also, again, a guy that could just fly through the minor leagues and be a bullpen ace at worst, or he could be a legitimate middle of the rotation guy for you at the next level. It's a really fascinating case to kind of dive into, and just for me with like the effort and the lack of a real breaking ball, he's kind of lower for me. But you know, he's got suitors in the top 10. We'll see what happens come draft day.
Do you want to go to the White Sox, James?
Yeah, we can.
So the White Sox are fortunate to have the 10th pick. Somehow magically they ended up with the 10th pick here again, thanks to these new rules. What are your thoughts on the draft pick for the White Sox?
Are you talking about just like with the rules in general?
I'm just making a joke because I absolutely hate these new draft rules. But what do you think the White Sox are going to do at 10?
Yeah. If it helps, I'll start with the rules here first. You guys do get you don't have to have this rule next year, and say you guys get lucky in the lottery and you're in the top six.
It's the better class for sure. Yeah.
That's a better class.
That is true. That is true.
And let me tell you, would
Rock Jalowski go number one in this class?
Easily.
Yeah. Right.
Easily. Yeah. Like I think I spent 45 minutes just on this defense the other night, just watching it, and I was, my jaw was on the floor.
Yeah, so that's the UCLA shortstop. He's a sophomore. He's not eligible, but
yeah. And he was highly touted at high school too. Like, seeing what he's done, just fantastic what he did this year. 20 plus home runs, gold glove defense at shortstop. Can't hate on that kid whatsoever, but you know, at 10 right now, you know, obviously I understand, like, we put Doyle at 10 today, but if I had to be a betting man, I wouldn't be surprised if the White Sox kind of look at that prep shortstop class and dive into, like, JoJo Parker. If JoJo's at 10, take him. I think JoJo is very underrated in this class. He swung and missed on one fastball all summer last year, and it's a really good hit tool, really good power. I think as he grows, maybe he grows into his body and his athleticism and kind of turns into a shortstop, but right now it's kind of TBD on where he ends up. But he's a really, really good bat in this class. And I'm surprised. I think there's some outlets that kind of still have him back somewhere in like the 20s or something. I think he's a legitimate top 10 talent in this class. So if he's at 10, you know, you pounce on the opportunity. If there's anybody else to kind of take there, I would wager someone like Cason Cunningham could be of interest. He might be a second baseman, but it's a legitimate hit tool from the left side, has some pop in the tank, but he's really polished. It's really hard to go against the track record that he has. And outside of that, you know, could there be a shortstop that kind of sticks in there, like Merrick Houston, like we talked about before? Merrick definitely has suitors between 10 and 15 at this point, and I would wager he goes somewhere in that range. So I think at the end of the day, if there's not a bat available that Chicago likes and Liam Doyle's there, take him. But if there's JoJo Parker or even Merrick Houston, Gavin Keelan at 10, I think my gut would tell me go after one of those guys and go from there. So it's still a bit wide open, but we're kind of narrowing it down to the prep shortstops and whatever arm is available if you happen to go that route.
How likely do you think it is that one of Parker or Billy Carlson got to him? Because if they're both gone, like, somebody else is on the board, right? But,
you know, that's interesting. I think Carlson maybe goes in the top eight.
Yeah.
It's really tough to knock the glove. I think it's a 7 glove at the next level. And there's field to hit. There's some power projection there. He's a bit of a project, but, like, track record, SoCal, and really, really good glove. Can't beat that. I would say JoJo has a better shot to be available at 10, but even then, we'll see what happens. Reportedly, Seattle really, really loves JoJo. I don't know if they do that at this point, but I'm not going to sit here and say it's not a possibility, but we'll see what happens. It's going to be very, very interesting on draft day.
Do you run JoJo Parker out as a shortstop though right away?
I'd say start him at shortstop, and if he happens to come across a better defender or he just shows that he can't stick there, third base is probably the best fit for him. Mainly because of the body. He's pretty physical. I think he's like 6'4", 200. So fit him, probably fits there at third base long-term if he's not a shortstop.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's my fear, is if, like, Willits goes super early and Carlson goes to, like, the Pirates or something, you know, I'm just not sure JoJo Parker gets past the Marlins. So it's kind of just one of these things where it's like you're looking at all, you know, I don't think it's as simple as the White Sox taking 10 names and stacking them and taking the guy that's left, because money factors in, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I do agree. Like, I think they want a shortstop, and I think they'd prefer a high school one. But I'm curious to know, you know, and you don't know this, obviously, but, you know, like, who would have to be off the board for them to go like Keelan or Merrick Houston instead at this point, basically? I'm really curious.
Yeah. I would imagine if, you know, all of Willits, Holiday, and Parker and Carlson are off the board, that's when Merrick and Keelan really start coming into play more. Because I'm just not really sure if Steel Hall or even Daniel Pierce is like a top 10 talent in this class. Like Steel Hall, insanely athletic, 80 runner, tons of bat speed, and he sticks at shortstop. But just not quite sure how well the bat is at this point. I've not really got a chance to scout him a whole bunch. And he didn't really perform well when I saw him last summer. But, you know, it's a big turnaround for a kid that was, you know, not really as explosive as he was a year ago is probably the best way to put it. And Daniel Pierce, like, I think there's some questions with the hit tool there. It's a really, really good glove, really good runner, a lot of impact to the middle of the field, but, you know, there's still some question marks to kind of really, really, really work on with the hit tool on that one. So I would wager, if those top four are gone, that's when Merrick kind of starts coming into play.
Yeah, the thing you bring up with Parker sliding over to third base, that's the kind of the thing that worries me about Holiday as well, because he's built a little bit more like Dad as opposed to Jackson, who's a little bit more streamlined. So, you know, I kind of worry about him moving over to third base, but I don't think he's going to be around for the White Sox either. So it's kind of... Mm-hmm. I'll be surprised if they take that just at all, just because they never seem to. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's another pitcher.
Yeah. I mean, I think they want to go bat, but you know, we'll see. I mean, cause look, if all these guys that we're talking about are not on the board, like somebody's going to be right. I think it's really easy to think that the three college lefties are probably going to be off the board and Iva Arquette will probably be off the board. But after that, it's, you know, it's going to be a bunch of these prep guys.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we didn't put this in the thing that we sent you, Tyler, but we do have like some local-ish guys, like Jack Bauer, obviously, you know, committed to Mississippi State because O'Connell just went there. How likely you think it is that he gets on campus, or is somebody going to pay him?
I feel like someone's going to pay him at this point. I've been on record saying, you know, it's still kind of the same guy as what I saw last summer, where, you know, last summer he was like 2-5, kind of stiff, didn't really throw strikes, but the stuff's obviously there. And he's throwing with more intent this spring, but it's also across shorter outings. Command's kind of the same, maybe just a slight tick better. And obviously throwing 102, 103 from the left side. That's something we've never seen on a prep scale in history. So he's an interesting case. I think someone does end up paying him. Probably not in the first round, though. I would wager, you know, early second round, maybe, to get him away from campus. But if he's still available, like by pick 50 or pick 60, he's gonna be someone to watch in Starkville, because that is legitimate arm talent. As much as, you know, I mentioned his stiffness and everything, and the command not being there, it's hard to beat a kid throwing 103.
Do you have Appenzeller ranked higher than him?
Let me double check, actually. I want to say I do.
Because he hasn't been, I feel like he hasn't been as good this, you know, this spring, whatever you want, you know, and I don't know that he's necessarily like a lock to sign either, but, you know, he was like the best Illinois pitcher, and that's way downstate. By the way, if you're not familiar, you know, he's not really a Chicago area kid, but there's been other kids from that area.
Yeah. Appenzeller, from what I've heard, like he also played basketball this year, and they made a deep run into the state playoffs, from what I've heard. So he did kind of get a late start compared to everybody else. But it's hard to really beat these projection lefties, either at the college level or the prep level. Like, you always bet on this kid, or these kind of kids, where, you know, one of these days they're going to finally start throwing hard, and then you're going to look back and go, we probably should have paid him. And just seeing him last year, like, he hit 94 from a low slot, really good slider, has feel for a changeup. I think he's the kind of guy that, you know, it's going to be a bit tougher to sign him. Tennessee is going to be breaking out the wallet to kind of get him to campus a bit, but, you know, it's legitimate talent that you're banking on comes around within the next year or so. He could be like the Son Hill, who the Twins took in, I think it was like the late second last year, where, you know, touched 96, really lanky, and now he's apparently touching 99 with more strength this year. So, you know, again, never really cut out these guys, but he might be a bit more of a overpay in terms of getting him to sign than we probably expected a year ago.
And then, Ian, I think the last one, obviously, Nazareth, Jaden Foskey. I know Sox are very familiar. I've seen him mock to them, like, in the second round. But then I've seen a bunch of the, you know, a bunch of the mocks from guys that have him not even making it that far, have him in the comp A round, basically. So I don't think he's going to catch. I think he'll play outfield. But, you know, I've had people tell me that, you know, that's the best bat in this area since like Alec Thomas potentially. So yeah, I haven't seen him in person though.
I dig that actually. Like I do think that's true. And I saw somebody ask like, what's a good guy to target at the first pick at the second round here on the comments. Foskey, I think it's a good one. You mentioned it. Swing's beautiful. I was really enamored with the swing last summer and the approach is really good. Doesn't chase. More of a slappy swing right now. He's kind of is like 6'3", 210, pretty physical. Am I back?
You're here. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Power just went out, so that was fun.
I thought I saw a flicker. I was like, oh, it got dark over there.
Yeah, we've got storms here, so this is fun. Classic North Carolina weather for anybody that's curious. But yeah, Foskey, like you mentioned, I don't think he catches the next level. I think he's like an outfielder, but you know, there's utility there. I think that the hit tool is really, really good. He's going to hit for power at some point, maybe with like a swing change, but you know, he's a guy I really, really do enjoy and have for a long time. If he falls out of the comp round, he's an easy guy to target at the second round with that first pick.
Yeah. And I think the Sox could go to 3 million at 44 potentially, mm-hmm. You know, like that's why I think if they could save a little bit in the first, they will. And then otherwise they'll just, you know, use the overage or whatever, but they'll be going over at 44. I mean, they did it last year with Caleb Bonnemer and it's looking like it's worked out pretty well so far.
Yeah. I'm glad that's worked out for Bonnemer. Cause I definitely have some question marks for him, but I'm very happy that he's found his stride and kind of turned the corner a little bit. I really like the kid.
So we got a couple of questions here in the chat that I figured I'd throw out here. And then I figured I'd invite you to stick around because we got a. I know that some people are really want to talk about this Rafael Devers thing. And it is just a crazy situation. So I figured, you know, why not? So best power bat in this draft, who do you think it is? Do you think it's Laviolette or do you think it's somebody else?
Yeah, I do think it's Laviolette. It's going to be, you know, there's some guys that probably put 80 raw on that power tool and probably 70 in game. I think Ethan Holliday is probably like 6 power in game and then 7 raw. He's probably the closest guy to kind of to really challenge him. But I would definitely wager Jace is the most powerful guy in this class.
What are your thoughts on Devin Taylor? I know the MLB has him somewhere in the mid 20s. Is that roughly? I didn't see your guys mock here and see where he went this week.
Yeah, I think so. I have in the back end of the first like 27th ranked on our board, and on the mock, I think I had him. Oh, I actually forgot to put him in. Oops. But, you know, I think the best way to describe Devin Taylor is he's a very well-rounded bat and a very well-rounded profile, but there's not a ton of upside to really tap into. He's pretty physical and maxed out already. He's like, I think he's 6'1", 215, 220. The speed's not the greatest, so he's not going to be a center fielder, probably a left field guy at the next level. And I've heard some guys wager that he might be a platoon risk at the next level. I'm not quite there with him yet, but he has struggled a little bit with lefties. But he's got the track record. He's got the pop to both sides of the field. There's a solid hit tool there. I wouldn't be shocked given the the weaknesses of this class to where he's a back end first rounder, just because of the fact that, you know, nobody else has jumped into the first round to really usurp him. And, you know, to even build on that, Caden Bodine's kind of the same way, where he's pretty much maxed out. You know what he's going to be, but he performs very well. It's a polished bat. We've seen him in his 25 game winning streak for Coastal, has been a very integral part of this lineup, and the defense has gotten better. So, you know, I think they're both similar profiles where they're back in first rounders, but there's not a ton of upside to tap into.
Yeah, I think Taylor can hit, but I think he's left field only for sure. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of, it's another Oriole pick 29.
Yeah.
As they just keep taking bats. Do you, how similar, Tyler, do you think, like if you want a Laviolette type and you're scared to death, like how different is Luke Stevenson? Cause he could stay at catcher too. And it's still that same type of like power profile.
Yeah. I think with Stevenson, there's obviously risk with the leverage that he has. He's a draft eligible sophomore. So he's going to command a lot more than, you know, Jace would at this point. There's a lot of hit tool questions with him, unfortunately. Like, end zone contact's not great. The contact quality is not good. I kind of just wonder how much he hits. But also, having a catcher with 55 power from the left side and has the tools to stick behind the plate, he's going to be a big leaguer for 5-10 years, you know? I would probably say, like, Andrew Fisher might be a better kind of bat to put on that tier. It's not insane power. Like, the X velocities kind of look at it. How do you wonder how he's hit 26 home runs or whatever he's hit this year? But he attacks heaters. He lifts the ball regularly. Doesn't whiff a ton. Doesn't really chase. There's an approach there. As much as he's not a, you know, legitimate position player somewhere, like he might be first base, might be a corner outfielder if someone thinks he's athletic enough, but it's a bat first profile that I think should be in the back end of the first round, just because of the fact that he's performed at a very high level for 3 years and has that approach to really go for him. Like, it's really pro ready, and shouldn't take a ton of tweaking to have him really succeed at the next level.
Do you have any opinions on Cannarella out of Clemson?
You know, at the beginning of the year, I was kind of wondering what was going on there, because obviously he had a labrum tear last year, played through it, didn't really show his speed or his power last year. But, you know, this year was really weird in terms of the power just really never showed up. But I'll give credit where credit is due. He ended the year on like a 22-game hit streak, looked a lot more confident in his swing down the stretch than when I saw him at the beginning of the year in Arlington. And I think he's a legitimate center fielder. I've seen people kind of put him on the same ledge as Vance Honeycutt, and I'm not quite there personally. I think Vance, being as good as he was for 3 years in that position at UNC, I thought he was an 80-grade defender and still think that. I think Cam's like a 6 or a 7 defender. But I would like to see somebody kind of tinker with the swing, see if like there's some more power to unlock in that, and kind of just let him get healthy too. I'm just not sure if he's 100% still from the surgery, but you know, he's an interesting guy. I think I would probably take him somewhere at the back end of, you know, like 30 or something, yeah. Or could be more of a comp guy compared to what he was to start the year. But you know, he's turned a corner, and I think somebody's going to look at that and kind of bet that he can continue doing that at the next level, and you know, hope and kind of pray that everything is kind of behind him with medicals.
Yeah, I think if the league lets him fall to the Dodgers at 40, he's going to be a top 100 prospect a year from now.
Oh my God. If the Dodgers get him, I might as well just close up shop. And
cause
just...
it's like cause you can tell like when they made whatever trade they made, they traded with the Reds and they got Mike Sirota. I was like, come on. And now Sirota is awesome in the Dodgers system, so it's just these are the things that they do.
Yeah, they just develop so well, man. And I will say too, I know the Dodgers area scout here, Jonah Rosenthal, who, you know, if you don't know the story, had a massive stroke in December, And we were really wondering if he'd ever be at the field this year. You know, he is one of the most down to earth and one of the friendliest guys I've ever come across. And, you know, it's kind of a bit off topic from what we're talking about, but wanted to give Jonah a shout out because he's been very, very friendly to me and has been an awesome guy to kind of interact with at the field this year. And I'm glad he's back. Like, you know, not even 4 months after a big stroke like that and he's back at the field, I thought that was a really awesome thing to kind of look at and go, you know, this is a guy to kind of model something after if you're like a guy trying to get into the industry.
Yeah, that's crazy. You have anything else, James? Any other draft questions here right quick?
No, I think we're good.
All right. Tyler, are you good to stick around for a couple minutes on some of this MLB stuff here?
Yeah, let's do it.
How shocked were you? Now, I know that you probably weren't all that shocked that he got traded, but how shocked were you when it was put out there that Devers got traded to the Giants?
It definitely shocked me quite a bit. And I, like, I'm trying to think. We were watching – I was in a group call with friends watching the IndyCar race in St. Louis last night. And we were joking around, having fun. I look over and I see the immediate text that he's been traded to the Giants. And I'm like, what in the world just happened here? In looking at the return, obviously, I know people have complained about it. But also, there just wasn't any leverage from the Red Sox in this one. It just looked like a very messy relationship that was just not going to succeed. And having the Giants eat the remainder of what, like 8.5 years, $285 million. You're not going to get a ton of talent coming back from that, because I feel like the Giants would have just hung up the phone if they had asked for like Eldridge or Wisenhunt to go pair with like Birdsong or something instead of Jordan Hicks, Kyle Harrison, and I think Tibbs was also thrown in there with another guy.
Yep.
I like Kyle Harrison. I think the fastball plays, it's done really, really well this year, but there's some stuff to work on with the secondaries. And then James Tibbs is, you know, he was one of my favorite guys last year, had a platoon risk, but I think he's kind of gotten away from that now where he's an above average run producer. Even at high A, like I understand he's hitting .245, but he's got like 12 home runs, nearly
he's got like 875 OPS or something.
Yeah. It's like a 153 weighted runs created plus or something. I think he's hitting like .300 off of lefties now. So I think he's found that sweet spot where he's comfortable against lefties. And I'm very interested to see how he develops in the Boston system. I also just find it funny that, you know, they trade Kyle Teal, who they took, I think what, pick 12?
It's actually Montgomery, I think. They took Montgomery.
Oh, Montgomery, yeah,
they
yeah.
took Montgomery at 12 and Tibbs went 13. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why I went Teal, but like,
but Teal was the year before, it was 14. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it was like same range, but like, that was funny to me, seeing that like they traded the guy they took ahead of Tibbs, and now they have Tibbs but don't have Montgomery.
So, I mean, I actually think they got quite a bit just based off of like not eating any of the money, right? So, like, you can argue that they could have gotten more for Rafael Devers if you shopped him around the league.
Yeah.
But you also would have had to eat like a lot of the money. I think they found the one team that was willing to eat the whole thing, because the Giants, like, just they have no luck getting free agent sluggers to go there. So, you know, me and Ian kind of talked about it pre-show. I mean, like, the Mets can afford it, but they're not going to do it for a DH, and like the Cubs wouldn't. I think the Giants were the team, and I think they sucked out as much as they could get, like, you know, as like doing the trade the way they did it.
Yeah. I think they did good given the circumstances, but obviously, you know, people look back and see, hey, Mookie Betts was traded for, you know, what feels like a toothpick and a baseball.
Yeah.
What, 5 years ago at this point?
For sure.
I
think it's a no-brainer for the Giants, though.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Like, this is – McCovey Cove's going to get sprayed a lot. So I'm very interested to see how that plays as a outside fan, but also as a Boston fan myself. We'll see what happens.
That's tough. Sorry about that.
Long suffering Red Sox fan over here.
Yeah. Hey, the way I look at it, I remain unbiased for a reason.
Yeah.
kind of have to, but at the bottom of my heart, it does hurt a little bit.
Yeah, I think the other piece was Jose Bayo.
Yeah, he's like he's a reliever. Yeah, young reliever.
So like the thing that I found odd about it when James and I talked about this earlier is that they've already got Chapman at third base. They've got Bryce Eldridge coming. But I mean, you did see a change in attitude from Devers saying that he would play first base for the Giants. So I don't know, maybe that'll end up working out for them. I mean, obviously it was no brainer that you trade for that kind of bat because they haven't had a 30 home run hitter in, you know, years now. Mm-hmm. Maybe he does not provide the same headache there in San Fran that he did in Boston, because that whole thing was just an absolute train wreck through this, you know, for this first couple months of the year here.
Yeah, I had a feeling once the first publication kind of came out where they were butting heads, where like, this isn't going to last very long. I definitely wasn't expecting it to last, you know, 2-3 months, but I think at the end of the day, they had both moved on, kind of divorced at that point. I guess probably let him get something of value for him while also let him kind of succeed at, you know, a different team. But obviously, like, I think to your point, he does play first base until Eldridge gets there. And then he's probably just DHing the whole time after that. Because I think Chapman's injured right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens and how to deploy him. But I think he might just be the everyday DH at the next couple of years here.
I can't imagine paying that kind of money for a DH. I mean, you know, again, I am a White Sox fan saying this, so I can't imagine spending that kind of money at all, but specifically for a DH, absolutely not.
Yeah.
So on the way out here, Tyler, do you want to let people know where they can find all of your work?
Yeah. So first things first, right here, the little tag here, Tyler Jennings 24 on Twitter, justbaseball.com. You know, it's been a hell of a ride with them this year. And we've also got Connor Dorney. I think his tag is @CDorney on Twitter, X, whatever we want to call it. He'll be at the combine this week. Unfortunately, I can't go because of prior circumstances, but, you know, going to attempt to be at the draft this year. Connor's going to be getting some interviews in, getting some film in from the combine this week. So excited for him and excited to see what he kind of provides for us. And obviously moving forward, you know, catch us putting up some more scouting reports. I'm working on a report for Kate Anderson at the moment. And it'll be all put together in our top 300 board, as long with film that we've caught at the field this year, which is all coming on the On the Clock YouTube channel. And also just follow On the Clock on Twitter. I think it's @OnTheClock_1. Having to work with Jared, Will, and Jason from 64 Analytics has been a blast this year. So want to give them a shout out. But, you know, it's going to be a very busy next few weeks. I think I'm going to have collegiate national team stuff with USA coming up in 2 weeks. And then, you know, going down to the draft and coming back and doing the 2026 bats. So it's going to be very hectic, but I enjoyed the living hell out of this. So I'm excited to see what happens.
Is somebody live on draft night or no?
We'll see. I think in worst case scenario, if we have to do what we did last year, where we had a live stream for our Airbnb, we'll do that. But our hope is we're going to be at the field or wherever they're hosting it. I'm not sure where they're hosting it right now, but our hope is that we're going to be in the room, you know, covering it and having a blast.
Right. Yeah, I saw that the NFL, you know, the NFL draft, they had like that big like press row thing where they had everything set up. So I would think that they would probably have something like that for MLB at this point.
Yeah. I know they mentioned, I want to say it was last week, where like they're going to make the draft free for fans, but you still have to sign up to get in or something, which I think is a step in the right direction, personally. Because last year, I had a buddy of mine go, and he said they got kicked out as soon as the first round ended, and it was kind of a interesting endeavor. But I'd also wager, like, different venue, pairing it All-Star Weekend, kind of hectic. I'm not going to blame the league too much on that, but I think they've taken a step in the right direction there. I'm just very interested to see what happens in terms of like a press row or what happens there. Cause you know, there's obviously not a ton of room for stuff like that. So we'll see what happens, but I'm very much hopeful that we'll be in that room this year.
There'll be plenty of space in 2 years in Chicago.
Yes, there will. Yes, there will.
Yeah. Just waiting. I'm hoping they work out all their kinks here in the next, you know, the next two drafts. So that way in 2027, we're good over here in Chicago. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Tyler. Appreciate it. Thanks for hopping on with us and talking all things MLB draft. And we appreciate all the insight and awesome stuff.
Yeah. Thank you guys again for having me on. Glad we could do this again.
Yes, indeed. Are you good, James? All right. All right. I'm going to walk us out then. You have been watching / listening to the Future Sox podcast. If you are listening to this in podcast form, know that you can find us every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on YouTube and the Purple app. You can also find this podcast along with all of our written content at futuresox.net. If you're looking for White Sox prospect highlights, you can find them on X at Future Sox, and now also here on our YouTube channel. If you love the content and want to support us here at Future Sox, there is a link to our Patreon in our channel description and at futuresox.net. You can also toss up a super chat on our YouTube stream. Also, don't forget to like this stream and subscribe with notifications so you know when we're going live while helping us in the World Wide Web algorithms. My name is Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox. He is James Fox at JamesFox917. We appreciate all of you so much. Thanks for listening. Thanks for hopping in the chat. Thanks to our guest, Tyler Jennings, for coming on. Awesome. You guys, thanks for hanging out. We'll catch up with you guys next Sunday, where we'll have another guest also talking draft stuff. So thanks for hanging out. Thanks for hopping in and chatting and all that stuff. You guys drive this whole thing. We appreciate you guys. Have a great.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.